This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It is Meera Sivasuthi. It's a staple storyline on dramas like Grey's Anatomy. But in real life, how many of us really understand the ramifications of medical law on our experience of healthcare? Explaining more on medical laws here in Malaysia is Datu Dr. NKS Dharamasilan. He's the president of the Medical Legal Society of Malaysia. And they're also organizing a conference, I understand, from the 23rd to the 24th of November. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the show, Datu. How are you today?
Thank you. Fine.
You just want to shed more light on what the Medical Legal Society of Malaysia is all about.
Okay, the Medical Legal Society of Malaysia was founded about two decades ago with the intention and benefit of medical doctors and indirect benefit to the patients, would-be patients, and the public at large. Mm-hmm. What we are more interested is in educating everybody what are medical legal issues, how to prevent them, how to address them so that they are aware of the full facts of medical malpractice before they pursue the matter.
What are medical legal issues faced by Malaysians?
Medical legal issues probably, I would say, is when someone faces an adverse event when seeking treatment in hospital, in clinics, or in whatever situation that they are in and they are receiving medical treatment. Mm-hmm. And should something go wrong, not necessarily because of negligence, and lots of things can go wrong even in the best of care. So that adverse event would probably may not be due to negligence.
Do you think awareness is slowly, there's more awareness in this field here in the country?
Of course. I think now with the internet penetrating everybody, even in the bedroom, mm-hmm. I think that more people are aware of their rights, what to expect, and probably they read more about the that particular disease that they are infected than anybody else. Mm-hmm. And when they go and meet the doctor, probably they are well informed and they expect to have answers to their questions that they may have come across the internet, which may not necessarily be the actual facts.
Okay, but we have 66% broadband penetration in the country, but do you think, medical stuff can be a little scary for some people to understand. They need it to be broken down. And there's a lot of misinformation out there as well, information that's not accurate. So then, how do you really think people are more empowered now, or is it just a small segment of society?
I think generally most of them are empowered with knowledge, with the standard of education rising, standard of living rising, and of course, in tandem, the expectations also rise. So it's doctors are also changing their mindset, and it is not paternalistic anymore, where I say, what I do is right, you follow me. Mm-hmm. Things have changed, and now it has become a partnership. Doctors are increasingly encouraged to talk to their patients, to tell them the problems, and have a mutually satisfying conversation before they come. They proceed with further treatment, mm-hmm. and majority of the time, that where medical legal issues have risen, even in the courts, we find that a simple communication, where there's some problems with communication, that gives rise to this problem of patients pursuing the matter in courts. Natural tendency for everybody to clamp up. And when the doctors decide to open up, I think, and discuss with patients their problems and tell them these are the things that are expected. And if the patients too do not, for every problem, seek the lawyers and the courts, if they care to ask the doctor what exactly happened, that probably would have answered most of their questions.
Right, okay. Isn't it a tedious process as well, going through the whole legal system? I was reading can take like up to 7 years to, actually come to some sort of settlement, and as a result a lot of cases are settled out of court. Is that necessary? What is the gap in the system?
I think sometimes it takes up to even 10 years for a case to be settled. Mm-hmm. And where the party is injured, the patient is injured, maybe due to some fault of the doctor, if it be so, the doctors too want that the patient be compensated as soon as possible. It's no point of waiting for 8-9 years. And some of them would have passed away in that period and getting no benefit at all. So we should encourage a system where we need to resolve issues even before and as fast as possible. And in that line, the Malaysian the Medical Legal Society of Malaysia and the Malaysian Medical Association, of which both are, I'm president of both the associations, we have decided to form a mediation bureau on the 1st of December, and this will encourage both patients and doctors to come voluntarily there to resolve issues.
So it's pro bono then?
Yeah, pro bono.
You don't have to pay for it?
You don't pay for it and you don't come with lawyers. We come there as far as possible to understand these are probably small issues that can be resolved to the satisfaction of both. Some may have the impression that it'd be a protectionist sort of peer review issue, but that's not the case, because the Medical Association itself and the Bar Council itself sends their own professionals for disciplinary, it takes disciplinary action on members when they cross the line. And the same will apply if they are found to be negligent or they indulge in malpractice.
Right. Lawyers seem to face problems in that some doctors are not prepared to come forward and give medical evidence. Is that a weakness in the system as well?
I think previously it was like no one likes to. It's just like you, even in a normal case, a normal layman, he wouldn't like to go and give evidence against a fellow colleague, even in the courts. And the same applies here to a profession. There was pure brotherhood or whatever you say, but I think that is increasingly being broken down, and now it's much easier to get experts to come and testify for the plaintiff, who are the patients, and the Medical Legal Society itself will assist where possible to seek a medical witness who's willing to testify for the plaintiff.
Right. Is it difficult to establish medical negligence?
I think with the number of cases that are being before the courts and the number of awards it has gone up to 5 million, you know, in cases of cerebral palsy.
And 5 million.
5 million awards have been given by the courts.
Right.
And
over a period of?
For a single case.
Okay.
Okay. Right. And this has caused professional indemnity insurance to rise for doctors, and obstetricians pay somewhere in the region of 80,000 ringgit per year. And if it keeps going up, you will find that in areas where specialists are needed, doctors will not want to specialize in those areas which are prone to where the patients seek indulge in litigation to get awards.
Which you don't want either.
Which you don't want either. And this will result in defensive medicine. The doctors will be too careful and do blood tests just for the sake of safety rather than if it's needed.
Right.
So that it is an all... it increases everything. Yeah,
it's got a knock-on effect.
Knock-on effect.
That's right. But who are medical laws designed to protect? Is it to protect just the consumer? Of course, it protects the patient, the doctor as well.
It protects everybody. The law is the law. It is supposed to protect everyone, the doctor's rights, the patient's rights, the nation's rights. But I think now the courts are increasingly opening the barriers, testing the frontiers of medicine. Now I think you would have read a couple of days ago that there are certain instances where you need to get a spouse's consent for surgery, which may not be possible all the time. And the judge said that in that factual matrix of the case where the wife was so dependent on the husband, the doctor should have sought opinion from the spouse. Mm-hmm. But it may not always be possible for the doctor to determine how dependent she is on the husband. Mm-hmm. Conversely, will the same law apply if the wife is the husband is going for surgery, and say high risk surgery of say like coronary bypass or whatever, and the wife feels that it's too dangerous, and you know she's so dependent on the husband, she doesn't want to lose the husband, and yeah. if the wife says no, does the doctor do? Doesn't do. So it opens up a big Pandora's box. You see, mm-hmm. it can go either way. You can argue and. So doctors have become very, very, and it's time consuming. In an emergency, we need to seek out the spouse. It may delay things, and that delay itself may result in
other complications, maybe even death.
So the medicine works on every second. Yeah. Every second could be life saving, and this type of additional pressure on the doctor. It's not going to help things.
Right. So how do you plan to strike a balance then?
We strike a balance, but I think we would actually encourage doctors and patients to consult each other, talk to each other, even before anything happens. For surgery, they should come. They should all ask all the questions that they need to ask. Mm-hmm. And doctors these days, they even prepare standard brochures, flyers about a particular a disease, what are the risks involved, why you are doing it, and what are the long-term effects, what are the short-term effects, so that the patient is fully aware what she's getting into.
Right.
And it's so fortunate that sometimes if those normal things are all written there, and one rare thing that is not even heard of is written there, it happens. The doctor is still found guilty because he hasn't told of that rare possibility that could occur.
That's right. Malpractice is, of course, what we're referring to most of the time. What does that actually cover?
It covers anything where the practice, malpractice is bad practice. And it implies that doctors have practiced bad medicine. Not necessarily the case. And we have the studies all over the world have shown that 70% to 80% of time where the patient feels that there is some malpractice, mm-hmm. it is not so.
Right.
It's rather because of lack of communication that that thing has arisen.
Yep. So when we come back, we'll find out when should a patient actually decide to take legal action, as well as confidentiality is something else that comes into questions under medical laws. If you have a question for Dr. Tharmasilan, send it through 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. It is The Bigger Picture, and in the studio with me, President of the Medical Legal Society of Malaysia, Dato Dr. NKS Tharmasilan. We're discussing medical laws in Malaysia. Just before we go on, Doctor, you have a conference coming up. It's titled Law, Ethics and Medicine, Friends or Foes, happening 23rd to 24th of November. What's that all about?
This is our the Medical Legal Society is continuing effort to educate the public, the doctors and all stakeholders about medical law. And this year we have included ethics into this, where ethical considerations also will be taken into account. The keynote speaker is a well-known personality, Tan Sri Dato' Abu Bakar Sulaiman, who was a former DG, and his particular emphasis will be on ethics. And I think it would be good if all the stakeholders attend this talk and benefit hearing out to him and other things that will be discussed during the conference.
Right. Why ethics? Could you give me an example?
Ethics, there are so many things that can be legally right, but ethically wrong. A doctor may have done an operation, but he may not have... he may also got consent legally, but he may not have... he may have got the consent not in good light. He may have used pressure, you would have coerced, or you could have said that if you don't do it, you don't come back and see me. Mm-hmm. Or they may have been pressurized by the husband to do it. So these are all ethical issues that can where there are some places where you do even cosmetic surgery,
yes,
and then charge it under the insurance, which is not allowed to do so.
Right.
So these are things that can be
can
affect practice. Can come, right. come. Yeah.
What are the legal ramifications for the patient if he or she actually refuses or decides to withdraw from treatment?
Actually, Bharat, here the law has become so centered around patient autonomy that the patient has got the right to refuse to take treatment,
mm-hmm,
notwithstanding that it could have detrimental effects and cause death.
Yes. I mean, for an example, a lot of people we know decide to opt for complementary or
yes,
alternative treatment, right? So that would come under this?
Yes, true. And as long as the patient decides, refuses the consent,
mm-hmm,
or after partaking in the procedure, decides to withdraw, I think that the doctor should respect. But however, as the last case, the Court of Appeal says, Razak's case, you should also consult the spouse. And according to the law now, you should try to get the spouse to speak to the wife,
right,
to make a change of mind.
There seems to be a lot of emphasis on the spouse. I mean,
yes,
what if you're single and, then what happens?
I don't know whether the court will decide you have to ask your parents then.
And if they're around. If they're not around, then what happens?
Yes. That, as I said earlier, it also opens up the Pandora's box.
Mm-hmm.
How far do we go? And this is going back again. I think it's a regress in the sense that patient's autonomy is not respected. And in this particular case, it was not the surgery itself. It was just insertion of a Ryle's tube,
mm-hmm,
which the patient refused.
What happened? You want to tell me?
Okay. And in this particular case, there was this lady who had intestinal obstruction. And the normal procedure is to insert a Ryle's tube. A Ryle's tube is a small tube, the diameter would be probably like a straw, but it's a long tube.
Okay.
And which we push it into your nose, into your stomach, to empty the contents. Because when you're put under anesthesia, if you sort of regurgitate, vomit, and if it enters your lungs, you're almost dead.
Yes.
So to prevent that, they try to put in a Ryle's tube before surgery. So in this particular patient, when the patient was wheeled to the theater, the patient refused to have a Ryle's tube inserted.
Mm-hmm.
As much as they tried to convince her, she said, no, I wouldn't want something to be so uncomfortable. So the doctors assured that it would not be comfortable. She was adamant. And it was recorded in the notes that this patient has refused.
Right.
So in good faith, the doctors took her to theatre and they thought, we'll put her under anesthesia first and then put in the Ryle's tube.
Right.
But in that process, she regurgitated. And it came out. And she vomited, it entered her lungs, and she died.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact was, in court, the doctors, experts on both sides, for the plaintiff and for the patient, came and testified that even if the Ryle's tube was inserted, she could have still vomited and she could have still died.
Right.
Notwithstanding that, the judge decided that because this patient was so dependent on the husband for all decisions she made,
mm-hmm,
that the husband should have asked. But here she already made a decision. Maybe she should have been dependent on her husband to make other decisions.
Yes.
But here a decision was made. But the husband, a legal personality, insisted that if you had told me, I would have convinced my wife to have the Ryle's tube.
Right.
Notwithstanding the fact that experts had also given evidence on both sides, the plaintiff's expert and the doctor's expert, that even if a Ryle's tube was inserted, she could have still died.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor was found guilty.
I see.
And it was affirmed by the Court of Appeal.
Right. So as you said, it's going to open up a whole can of worms.
Worms, yeah.
It's going to be a slippery slope.
Yep.
But what about other countries? I mean, do we sort of emulate or use other countries as an example?
I think if you find consent law, especially in the UK, which we follow all the time, where the common law or where the Malaysian law, where there are loopholes or there are blanks, we follow the English law.
Mm-hmm.
And most of our law follows English law. And that patient autonomy is given so much of, even if the husband refuses, the wife goes on. Where the wife refuses and if the husband, there's no way they get the husband to consent or to refuse consent. And so many times surgery has been done on women where the husband has refused to do, refused to give consent. And they've gone to the courts asking the courts to bar doctors from doing it because they refuse consent for surgery to be performed on their wife. So that's the difference. But some would consider that the case that I said, because the judge specified that the factual matrix of that case where the wife is so dependent on the husband, it doesn't really change consent law. But I think not, because I think it pushes consent to a very, as you said, slippery slope.
That's right.
Where there's no certainty. There could be some ambiguity.
Yeah, the last thing you want to do in an emergency is try and figure out how dependent the wife or husband is on the spouse, isn't it?
You need to do that in advance.
So what about confidentiality and privacy when it comes to patients?
Confidentiality, I think that's very, very important. I think confidentiality laws have been well established in Malaysia. And I think recently there was also a court decision where the UK, one of the universities had revealed confidentiality information about the patient. And he sued, and he was successful. That was just about a week ago.
In Malaysia.
And even the Medical Council, Malaysian Medical Council, which is a regulatory body for doctors, also views confidentiality of prime importance and emphasizes all the time that even information about the wife should not be given to the husband. Mm-hmm. So I do not know whether after this consent law, whether this would change also. But as far as the law is concerned, confidentiality is of prime importance. And what a person above 18, any information about her or him actually remains confidential with the patient himself.
You want to give me details of that case that just happened? Or that was, the judgment was just...
That case, I think, was a patient with some... I'm not too clear, but... about some mental problems, and his records were revealed to these employers without his permission, and that cost him. He had filed a case, it caused him a lot of embarrassment and whatever not. And he sued the hospital and four of the directors, and he got compensated.
Immediately, what comes to mind is people living with HIV. All of that comes. Privacy is of utmost importance.
Yes,
do we have it properly written out in the country?
Yes, it is written out, but here, as the court has also agreed, that confidentiality is of prime importance. And there are lots of cases especially when there are difficult times in a married life, where the patient uses the wife's records to file for divorce, and that information has been obtained illegally. And if the doctor has given it to the husband without the wife's consent, then he'll be held liable too.
Right.
And action has been taken by the medical council in these matters.
So what should we as patient, what sort of measures should we take to ensure privacy?
I think we also have to change our mindset. It doesn't mean that we should be going and asking the doctors about our wife's information, and so does the wife about her husband. I think we should start at home first.
I mean, it's weird, isn't it? On the one side, as far as malpractice is concerned, you want to get the spouse's consent, but on the confidentiality side, you need to keep things, separate. Yeah. So we need to get our act together here.
I think maybe the confidentiality also may change in line with consent laws.
Yeah.
I hope not, because again, as I said, it's going to open up a Pandora's box.
What sort of advice would you offer to patients, especially when we are signing agreements with hospitals, Dr. Dharma? Because, at that time, who's going to read the fine print? Who's really reading agreements? What should we do?
I think the best, in addition to whatever is in the fine print, but I think our fine print in the hospitals are much bigger, the fonts for you to read. I think
it is when you're under stress and anxious, you know, who goes through it?
I think the best is to sit and talk to the doctor what your problems are. And if need be, bring your husband along or somebody who you trust to come and sit during the discussions to ask whatever questions that you want to ask before you undergo any surgery. Make it crystal clear that the surprisingly, the second case was this this lady has gone to court saying that I went for a hysterectomy. And then the next, she goes for a follow-up and she asks the doctor, when I can get pregnant again.
Oh, dear.
So it's and the doctor says, I have said it. The patient says, you haven't said it.
Yep.
Unfortunately, the doctor has recorded it in his notes. So the patient's word is taken. So these things shouldn't happen, you see. It's a patient undergoing hysterectomy and coming for the next follow-up and saying, when can I get pregnant again? Shows lack of communication, absolute lack of communication. In fact, there's no communication here, I think.
Yep. For sure, for sure. So what sort of path should we take in the instance of malpractice? I mean, who should we go to? Who should we take this
up? I think before going to anybody, I think the most important thing, the parties involved, the doctor and the patient, should sit and talk and try to allay all those malinformation that they have got or misinformation they have got, try to seek answers for their queries. And if they're not really satisfied, then they could pursue the matter because the answers may be there and a simple explanation would have, if they need be, they can even ask a written explanation.
Right.
And they can meet the board of the directors of the hospital, ask them, and they will definitely, no management would like to defend a doctor who has gone wrong or who has done an negligent act. And we, as doctors...
Well, you know what? It's all about reputation management in this country as well.
Yeah.
You know, private hospitals are very dependent on revenue. And nobody really wants their doctors to be, you know, put in the bad light.
Yes, of course. That's the reason why they are willing to talk. And I think most of the time, if the hospital feels that something has really gone wrong because of the hospital or because of the doctor, they are more than willing to, because they feel there's a need that the patient should be compensated for wrong done to him. And I don't think they will get away from that. They want to get away from that responsibility. They're not going to hide facts because inevitably it will come out because there's a process of discovery where all the notes that are written by the doctor and the hospital will be exposed to everybody to see.
Yeah.
So nowadays, I think the hospitals, even government hospitals, they're more than willing to share their notes, discuss the matter, and if they so think at an early stage that they have done something which should not have been done, they are more than willing to provide compensation at that particular period of time rather than wait for it to be drawn into the courts and, as you say, bad advertisement and affects the hospital practice, affects the name of the doctor's reputation,
right,
whatever not.
But then again, you know, will that sort of lead to doctors getting away with malpractice?
I don't think, you see, if a doctor is going to be...
Or even a hospital.
If a doctor is going to be regularly getting into problems, then I think the hospital will definitely mark him down. And the Ministry of Health is also thinking progressively, proactively, and they intend at a period of time to grade the hospitals like hotels. Mm-hmm. 4-star, 5-star, according to the number of the morbidity, the mortality, the results, rather than just by cost and the infrastructure that they provide. So that will be a good thing because it definitely will, accountability will be there and you can choose which hospital to go.
Have we included ranking the doctors as well? Because I think it's being done in the UK.
Yes, I think there are steps, the medical council, the Ministry of Health, and I think even the NGOs, the doctors' NGOs, they're also thinking in the line. We also need to be accountable. We also need to be transparent. We also need to improve ourselves, no getting away with it. And medical practice has become more stressful. And not only stressful, I think it has become more accountable. So I think we also need to pull up our socks.
Do we have enough legal professionals, experts in this field to take through these cases?
There are not too many, really, as much as we say about medical, because medical legal problems are highlighted. They become sensational. They are the news. They sell tabloids. They sell news, you see. So everybody gets the impression that it's occurring all the time, every time. But it's far and few in between. And I think there are enough experts here. We don't really rely on foreign experts to come and give expert evidence. And I think the field is, and that's where the MLSM has come into play. And we are going out talking to colleges, talking to law faculties, hospitals, private hospitals, public hospitals, trying to encourage awareness about medical legal problems.
Is this a subject that should be introduced in medical school?
I think they are introducing to a certain extent, and the Medical Legal Society is also encouraging most colleges to call us up, let us come and talk to them, and let doctors not just think that it is going to be sunshine
and dandy
all the time. You know, that they also need to how to avoid problems. And I think the most important factor, if I take a message for any doctor and any patient today, will be communication. If you communicate, I think half the problems will be resolved.
How do we get in touch with you at the Medical Legal Society of Malaysia? Is there a website?
Yes, there's a website, Medical Legal Society website. You can go into the website anytime and get information there. We also have launched our stet and gavel, stet for stethoscope and gavel, as our e-bulletin, and we also have hard copies. And all those who are attending this conference on the 23rd and 24th of November will be given a hard copy of that magazine, which will contain all the reported, updated cases in the last 2 years about medical negligence, for them to be aware of what's happening in the medical legal field.
But I think the way forward, and it's a good initiative, is the Mediation Bureau to help everyone to come forward.
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
President of the Medical Legal Society of Malaysia, Datuk Dr. NKS Tharmasilan, on medical laws in Malaysia on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.